Hello, and you are listening to Eco Justice Radio on KPFK Los Angeles. We present environmental and climate stories from a social justice frame featuring voices not necessarily heard on mainstream media. Eco Justice Radio acknowledges that we recorded this show on the traditional territory of the Tongva people and all of their relatives in the place we call Los Angeles. Welcome, I'm Jack Eid. On today's show, Hidden Costs of Empire, U.S. Interventionism in the Developing World. We feature a presentation given by progressive political analyst Michael Parenti, given in 1986 at the height of the Cold War with Russia and interventions in Latin America. Our intention is to illustrate how Parenti's incisive analysis of capitalism and its revolutionary discontents holds true today as the U.S. empire, frankly, is coming apart at the seams. Michael Parenti is a U.S. political scientist, academic historian, and cultural critic who writes on scholarly and popular subjects. He is the award-winning author of 24 books, including The Face of Imperialism from 2011 and Democracy for the Few, originally written in 1974 with a ninth edition published in 2010. He has taught at universities and has also run for political office. Parenti is well known for his Marxist writings and lectures and is an intellectual of the United States left. We want to note this is a special fundraiser show for KPFK. We hope that you will consider contributing to keep educational shows like this one on the air 24 hours a day. Please call 818-985-5735 or go to kpfk.org to make your donation. We appreciate your collaboration to help keep us on the air. Michael Parenti passed away this week at the age of 92. Born to a working-class Italian-American family in New York City, he earned his doctorate at Yale and taught political science despite being blacklisted for his political views. We re-air this yellow lecture, referring to the poor 1980s video quality, because after the U.S. war machine has gone after Venezuela, talked about Greenland, pushed for Iran, has designs on Cuba, Nicaragua, and Colombia. Who's next? This desire for hegemonic control from this failing empire will not stop until we all step up and make it stop. And this imperial boomerang, what Chalmers Johnson called blowback, is hitting us in Minnesota, on the streets here in Los Angeles, all the way to Maine. The violent methods to control and subdue smaller, weaker countries, disappearing intellectuals, activists, political leaders, like I saw in Guatemala in the 90s, where activists were unalived without fear of accountability, like what just happened in Minneapolis. We did it to Vietnam. We did it in Iraq. Now we're doing it in where? Where next? Enough. Today we feature Michael Parenti as he delivers a powerful lecture at the University of Colorado, Boulder, from 1986. Parenti discusses the intricacies of U.S. interventionism, the dynamics of capitalism, and the historical exploitation of the developing world. He challenges conventional narratives about poverty in the global South, asserting that these nations are not poor, but rather overexploited. Join us as we unpack his insightful analysis of imperialism and the ongoing struggles for social justice that our oligarchs and their political class have not seemed to learn the lessons from 40 years ago. And as the stature of this lovely experiment called the United States of America erodes daily on the world stage, supporting endless war in Ukraine and Palestine and so many other Middle Eastern countries' disastrous trade policies, and of course, the ongoing hegemonic and regime change operations in multiple countries. Once again, this is Michael Parenti, University of Colorado, Boulder, U.S. Interventionism, the Third World, and the USSR, April 15th, 1986.
A no-growth capitalism, as some of our more naive ecologists have argued for, is a contradiction in terms. The reason you invest is to accumulate. And your accumulation of capital has no purpose or meaning unless you can mix it with labor to yet increase your wealth further. And of course, you use large sums of it for personal consumption and for political power and for control of your culture and for that wonderful, good, happy life that you so like. As George Bush's wife said, we are millionaires, or we are not ashamed of it. We enjoy our wealth. And I thought, at last, they say it. Finally, they say it. Instead of the usual thing is, you know, how we rich suffer and we're misjudged, and it's just terrible being rich. Now, that nature of expansion really affects the nature of, I mean, it's an important imperative, because it means capitalism also can never stay home. It goes abroad. If you ever saw the film Controlling Interest, there's a corporate president who says, those corporations that stayed regional in New England years ago and decided not to go national, we can't even remember their names. They died. We had to go national. And those of us who are now national know we have to go international. We have to invest abroad. So one of the laws of capitalist motion and development is this inexorable expansion. And that means expansion into an expropriation of the third world, a process that's been going on for about 400 years, perpetrated by the Portuguese, the Spaniards, the Dutch, the Belgians, the French, the English, and most recently, most successfully, most impressively, by the Americans. That is by the ruling classes of these countries, not by the ordinary people. The ordinary people simply paid the costs of empire. The ordinary people simply sent their sons off to die on the plains of India or in the jungles of the Congo or in Latin America, wherever else. But that expropriation of the third world has been going on for 400 years, brings us to another revelation, namely that the third world is not poor. You don't go to poor countries to make money. There are very few poor countries in this world. Most countries are rich. The Philippines are rich. Brazil is rich. Mexico is rich. Chile is rich. Only the people are poor. But there's billions to be made there, to be carved out and to be taken. There's been billions for 400 years. The capitalist European and North American powers have carved out and taken the timber, the flax, the hemp, the cocoa, the rum, the tin, the copper, the iron, the rubber, the bauxite, the slaves, and the cheap labor. They have taken out of these countries. These countries are not underdeveloped, they're overexploited. One of the countries that had a great deal of Western capital in it was Tsarist Russia, mostly English, French, some German, some American, including one Herbert Hoover, who, with Leslie Urquhart, famous British millionaire, owned the Russo-Asiatic Corporation, which, if the Russian Revolution hadn't happened, Herbert Hoover would have been one of the richest men in the world. And years later, when he was president of the United States in 1931, when one-third of this country was unemployed, when people didn't have enough to eat, when people were driven to the edge of desperation, President Herbert Hoover said to the San Francisco Examiner, he said, my greatest ambition in life is to see the overthrow of Bolshevism in Russia. There came, with the Russian Revolution, a break in the fabric of international capitalist history. There now was a country where the unwashed, where the workers of Petrograd and Moscow were actually taking over, where they were actually taking over the land, the labor, the technology, and the resources of their country, where communists were coming in to power. And there's a remarkable correspondence between Secretary of State Lansing and President Woodrow Wilson, in which Lansing says, the Bolsheviks are wanting in political virtue. They would preach to the ordinary man that he might elevate himself through political means rather than by dint of hard work. This would be a most unfortunate example to the common man in our country and other countries. They understood what was the threat. The Americans themselves, the American ruling class, had very little cap, didn't have all that much. I told you about Hoover and a few other speculators, other people like that. But they joined in with 14 other nations to invade the Soviet Union, to overthrow the socialist government that had just been put in after the Tsar was overthrown. That process of invading a revolutionary country is still happening before our eyes. If you want to understand those years after the Russian Revolution, just look at what's going on in Nicaragua. Invasion, either by directly with troops from your own country, or by using surrogate troops, and they use the white armies and the white generals, the white guard armies. Embargoes, isolation, withholding food supplies, sabotage, encirclement, refusing diplomatic recognition. These are the methods that are used, and these are the methods, time-honored methods, that are being used right now by Reagan against another revolutionary government, which is Nicaragua. That process of encirclement and destabilization continued right until World War II. On the eve of World War II, Foreign Minister of the Soviet Union named Litvinov went to, did I pronounce his name correctly? No, I can't say it that way. Went to the Western powers and called for an alliance with England, the United States, and France against Nazi Germany. And that if the Germans attacked Czechoslovakia, they would all join in, or attack Poland, or attack anybody, that all the powers would join in to fight Hitler and contain him. The Western allies refused those overtures from the Soviet Union. Not because they were appeasers, not because they were simple and naive, quite the contrary, because they had a plan of their own, and that plan was Munich. And the plan was, we give Hitler Czechoslovakia, and he goes east. And they were waiting for a war, and that war was supposed to come, and it was going to be Nazi Germany finishing off Bolshevik Russia. Just as they had sent armies in against Russia just a few years, less than a decade before, so they now plan to do the same. And so they've done again and again. And that war was fought, and most of it was fought on the Eastern Front. 7 out of every 10 German soldiers who died in that war died on the Eastern Front. The scale of fighting was enormous. The battles of Kursk, Stalingrad, the Battle of Berlin, there's nothing like it that happened in the Western theater, on the Western Front. In the Battle of Berlin, you saw 2 million German soldiers against 3.5 million attacking Soviet soldiers. The losses were stupendous. But at the end of that war, the Soviet Union emerged as a major power, very weakened, very much weakened, having lost most of its industries west of the Urals, having lost 20 million people. Most of its transportation, by the way, at that time was still by horse or oxen in most areas for most of its population. But it still had the Red Army. And yet it was not an army that had any intention of marching through Europe, although that was a NATO myth that was cultivated at the time. And there's an interesting set of documents that just came out in the American Historical Review, which point out now that the West and the State Department never really believed that the Soviets were going to invade Western Europe. That was a myth which they consciously propagated. They knew that after an exhausting war, the last thing the Russian people would ever go for, or the Russian leaders themselves, they would go for was another war. There was no sense. They had no interest in such a war. The war they fought against Germany was defensive, and they wanted to rebuild their country. That was a myth that was consciously propagated, that if we don't stop them, if we don't build NATO, if we don't double, triple, quadruple our defense forces, the Ruskies will be marching under the Arc de Triomphe. The point of all of what I've said so far is just to point out to you that the Cold War did not begin in 1947, but it began in 1917. That the Cold War has been going on even before the Russian Revolution, in the sense that the U.S. has been consciously, and other Western countries have been consciously, suppressing any kind of revolutionary forces. When Ronald Reagan says that we've got to stop the Sandinistas and overthrow them because they are an extension of Soviet power, we might ask ourselves, we've been in Nicaragua 11 times, and at least 5 of those times there was no Soviet Union. We've invaded Costa Rica, we've invaded Haiti, we've invaded Mexico, and there wasn't Soviet Union. We invaded these countries long before there was a Soviet Union. It's not that they're surrogates of the USSR, but that they are developing revolutionary movements which will bring a competing social order, one that will use the land, the labor, the resources, technology, and capital in a different way, for social need, communally, for nonprofit, public sector development, rather than for private capital accumulation. This would mean the death of capitalism, of that class with its power and privileges, with life as they love it, and hold it and will fight tooth and nail to defend it. The U.S. empire at the end of World War II replaced Britain. The Brits were eased out of Iran. British oil companies were replaced by American oil companies. British sugar companies in Honduras were eased out by American sugar companies. And America also picked up the tab. America built a bases, an American empire, over 2,000 bases around the world, including about 300 major ones. American fleets are on every ocean. American planes fly the skies over every continent, almost. And so we see enormous investment in the third world. But what investment has brought to Haiti is the immiseration of the small Haitian farmers. Investment has brought in Latin America and most other countries has been the displacement of the peasantry. They're being thrown into shanty towns to suffer poverty wages or chronic underemployment. What investment has brought with it also is increasing illiteracy, sickness, poverty, and a dislocation and disfranchisement. A growing foreign debt, growing investment for cash crops. By the way, that's what the whole Mexican Revolution was about. Was the land going to belong to the Mexicans so they could grow beans and alfalfa and feed their people? Or was the land going to belong to the big sugar companies and latifundio owners so they could grow sugar to export as a cash crop to make more money or coffee or whatever else? And with that growth, with that investment comes a dislocation in the structure of the third world country so that the whole infrastructure of it gets built around capital extraction.
Hey, listeners, quick break here. We hope that you're enjoying EcoJustice Radio. Before we jump back into the show, we want to remind you that KPFK is in Fundrive. You rely on public radio for independent music, trustworthy news, and authentic culture. Consider what KPFK means to you and put a value on it today. Now more than ever, we're relying on you to keep KPFK free and thriving in Southern California. Become a member today or renew your membership now at kpfk.org/donate or call 818-985-5735. That's 818-985-5735. This station takes you behind the headlines and gives you vivid stories of real people that put the news in context. Journalism as storytelling is painstaking, laborious work, and it's not cheap. It costs tens of thousands of dollars to make 1 hour of a radio like this one. And if you like this kind of offering, the way we pay for it here on KPFK is the fairest, most democratic system in the world. Those listeners who like these stories each pitch in a little money. So please do your part. Call us now, 818-985-5735. That's 818-985-KPFK. Or go to kpfk.org and pledge securely online. Public radio is an important part of your life. Maybe you grew up with enlightened parents, informing the whole family on car vacations. Or maybe you just discovered it in the last years in your search for something that gets beyond the mainstream news and music that we are all inundated with. Become a member today or renew your membership now at kpfk.org/donate or call 818-985-5735. That's 818-985-5735. You are the center of making this vital service possible when you support our local station. Public radio stations like KPFK exist to serve your community with music and news that enriches your life because listeners like you stepped up in the past to make it possible. Keep public radio strong here in our state by donating to KPFK right now by becoming a member today. Or renew your membership now, kpfk.org/donate, or call 818-985-5735. That's 818-985-5735. Public radio stations in Southern California, like KPFK, help keep you informed, bring you new perspectives, and inspire you to explore this rich and diverse state. KPFK needs you. We need you. Go to kpfk.org and make your contribution, or please call 818-985-5735 or kpfk.org. Give now to keep KPFK going strong. Thank you for tuning in to EcoJustice Radio. Today you're listening to Hidden Costs of Empire, U.S. Interventionism in the Developing World. I'm your host, Jack Eide, and we feature a presentation given by progressive political analyst Michael Parenti, given in 1986 at the height of the Cold War with Russia and interventions in Latin America.
The economist Ray Brown, when he went to Cuba before the revolution, it was in 1958, he was there about a year or so before, was impressed by how every major road he saw went from a sugar plantation to a refinery to the seaport. While there were whole communities without roads that couldn't get to doctors, they couldn't have schools, couldn't see a priest, the sugar companies had their roads. And when you send foreign aid to those countries, 9 out of 10 of those dollars goes to build the infrastructure to subsidize the capital investment of the private corporations or to pay for the police and the army of that country, not to defend it from foreign invasion, because Uruguay is not going to invade Bolivia, because Taiwan isn't going to be invaded by the Philippines. But they need those big armies to defend their rulers from their own people, because those people are in such a state of miseration. So that's where our aid goes. And as someone once said, foreign aid is when the poor people, that's us, of a rich country, give money to the rich people of a poor country. And when Kenneth Boulding gets up and he says, an economist, you can see when you get brilliant people like Kenneth Boulding speaking so naively, you can see the troubles you get into, the swamps you go into, the baby talk, silliness you get into when you think without marks, when you think without class analysis. And Kenneth Boulding says, one of America's leading economists, he says, empire is irrational because it costs more than what we get out of it. The British, it costs them more in India than what they got out of it. The American investment in the Philippines is only about $3.5 billion, but we had to give them about $6 billion in aid. It costs us more than what we get out of it. And that's when you think without a class analysis, because as we know, as you're going to know before the evening's over, that it's very profitable. Because the people who have the $3 billion investment aren't the same ones as the people who pay the $6 billion. As Thorsten Veblen said back in 1909, and Boulding should have read him even if he is a Marxist, as Veblen said, the wealth that's extracted from imperialism goes into the coffers of the select few, whereas the costs of empire are paid out of the common treasure of the people. And so it was with the British Empire in India. It was the Brits, the ordinary working people, who paid for the cost of empire. It was the Bank of England and the East India Trading Company that got the cream. And so with the Philippines, right? Of course, with a good skim to your collaborator, your comprador there. What he got just in shoes for his wife. God knows his shoes for his girlfriends. Okay. Another resource in the third world that attracts capital investment. And you say to yourself, what is that mysterious resource? I'm looking at El Salvador, right? And I'm looking at the companies that are in El Salvador. And I look and I see Pillsbury, Procter & Gamble, U.S. Steel, Continental, ITT, Firestone, Ford. And I'm saying to myself, wait a minute, what the hell's in El Salvador? A little sugar, bananas. What are all these companies doing there? What they're doing is they're manufacturing everything from energy rods to baking powder, from auto tires to computers. They're in El Salvador because of a very precious resource in El Salvador, which is the cheap labor, which is paying people 50 cents an hour. Instead of having to pay auto workers $15 an hour up here, you go down there and you pay them 15 cents or 50 cents an hour. That becomes a very attractive thing. And you go to South Korea. New York Times had a story about the South Korean farm girls who work in the textile companies, companies that used to be in New England until they moved south. And then when the Southern workers unionized, they moved to South Korea, where there's a nice fascist little country where if the workers try to unionize, they get beaten up and thrown in jail or they get shot dead. And the Korean farm girls in those textile compounds are working for 18 cents an hour. 18 cents an hour for 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, no time off. And if you want a day off, you work a double shift if you want to go see your family again on the farm. And they live in compounds. That's the Industrial Revolution. That's 1870. But that's big profit. And that's what they call capital investment, development, friendly nation, staunch ally, good relations, stabilization, stability. And General Motors, when they tell you, ladies and gentlemen, that they've got to pave over Detroit and they've got to close down factories because the cars aren't selling as well as they should, what they don't tell you is that in the last 10 years, General Motors has opened up a dozen new factories in other countries for the reasons I just talked about. So here's another resource. This, in fact, is the key resource, the resource which is the source of wealth, along with natural resources, which is labor. Because one thing about labor It's one of the commodities of production. It's the one commodity that does not use up its own value entirely in that process of production. It creates wealth. Now, there's another development, though, that's come with all of this. And that other development is that revolutionary movements have been emerging all around the world, these competing social orders. And so they must be targeted. Now, the United States has given a number of reasons for why, Ronald Reagan has, most vividly recently, for why we must go on with our military buildup and our intervention in third worlds.
Hey, listeners, to check out the extended recording of this show or to explore our other shows, visit our website, ecojusticeradio.org, and subscribe to our podcast. This has been Eco Justice Radio and our show, Hidden Costs of Empire, U.S. Interventionism in the Developing World. Thank you to Michael Parenti, and thank you to our listeners for joining us. To conclude the show today, we want to reach out to all of you one more time to consider supporting KPFK with a financial donation. We know times are tough, and you might need to rethink what you can afford to give your favorite nonprofit organizations. That's why we are so appreciative of all contributions. It's a testament to how important KPFK is to you, our listener sponsors, that you voluntarily invest in this station. So if you can afford to support KPFK, we thank you because you're helping to provide this essential community service to everyone in our region. Please make your investment KPFK right now, 818-985-5735. That's 818-985-KPFK. Or go to kpfk.org. Pledge securely online. Community support is critical for KPFK. Unlike a lot of our public radio counterparts, 100% of our programming and production budget comes from you, our listeners. Any contribution is welcome and appreciated. Call us at 818-985-5735. That's 818-985-KPFK. Or go to kpfk.org and pledge securely online. Let's celebrate our freedom to have community radio, freedom to hear fact-based journalism devoid of corporate spin, freedom to hear multiple sides of an issue, freedom to have locally produced news and music, freedom to support a local community resource. Even the freedom to not support this station, which is why we need voluntary support. Tell us that KPFK is a valuable community resource and that you appreciate alternatives to the mainstream media. When we say this is listener-supported radio, well, it means it's your money that pays for these programs. And not only the programs, but the transmitters, the computers, the electricity, everything that it takes to bring you these programs. So here's a very large thank you to you. Your contribution to KPFK could be one of the easiest things you'll do all day. Grab your phone and call 818-985-5735. In about 3 minutes, you'll have done your part. Or join online. Click the Donate Now button, kpfk.org/donate, and you'll be on your way to membership. If you want to make things even easier, sign up as a sustaining member. Your monthly contribution of $5 or more will ensure your continuing support of KPFK. Supporting KPFK is easy and affordable. Call 818-985-5735. That's 818-985-5735. Or join online anytime at kpfk.org/donate. You have been listening to Eco Justice Radio, a project of SoCal 350. Executive producer, myself, Jack Eit. Co-host Carrie Kim, and engineer and original music by Blake Quake Beats. And until next time, remember, the power is yours.
You're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles.